Here we go. It's time for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Anthony.
Hello.
Dwayne.
Guten Abend.
Niall.
Alright, alright, alright.
And me, Brian. Matthew McConaughey is here. But first, the week in JoJo's news. Eyes of Heaven came out in Japan this week. There you go. JoJo's news.
All right, okay. Is it doing well? Is it people liking it? Or
didn't look any further than that.
Oh, right, okay.
There's certainly a thing that exists.
It's right, let's start off with some lovely Muko blunders. I accidentally described 1.5 episodes last week.
Niall, you can never leave again, because it just goes to shit. In terms of lovely Muko.
Symbolic display put on there, yeah.
Eating food on the microphone. Getting carried away describing too much lovely Muko. Watching the wrong lovely Muko episode.
Well, it stops now. The rot stops right now. Anthony discussion. That's it.
Anthony has demanded he describe episode 7 of Lovely Muko.
Well, Para, I can't remember what you've meant, because every episode could be very similar.
It's fine.
This is in the nicest way possible, Muko.
Actually, one of the characters points this out in this episode.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. So, episode 7, it is 7, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just checking, So, it's hottest day of the summer, and Muko is out of food. Well, not Muko, Komatsu is out of food for Muko. And it's a red hot day, and Komatsu's got this old tin of food that he won it in like a voucher or something. Anyways, he's got this tin of food, and Muko's outside, and she's red hot. She's about to get in the little pool of water, which I guess is just a little pond in her garden. Or Komatsu's garden. See, I'm thinking Muko's the owner here. Anyway, that would be great. So she's about to get in the water, just about to tap her toe or paw, whatever you want to call her in. And Komatsu comes out, and she panics and quickly runs back. And Komatsu puts out this food, and she starts eating it. She's not too keen because it's not the normal dry stuff that she eats. But she makes an effort anyway, because that's what Muko's all about, being the good dog. And then all of a sudden, she loves it. She loves the soft, tender meat of whatever meat they're using in that kind of dog food. And we see this weird kind of like dream sequence where she's in space, flying towards this huge tin of food. It's got what's that song, Ride of a Valkyries?
Yeah.
Getting hammered in the background. So it's all perfect. And Komatsu thinks, oh, no, you know, she's not going to go back to her old food, the dry crap. And she's not too keen. She's playing with her food. But she likes all food.
Yeah, she's a dog.
Short. She's a dog. She loves all food. You know, she's in space again. She's riding the Valkyries with the dry crap as well.
I call it dry crap
because I think dry crap's horrible for dogs.
I see you tried it out then, yeah. So you know.
I have tasted dog food before.
I've only tasted doggy treats before.
Ah, well, want to see if the chocolate is as nice as
it was just like an old chocolate button.
It's very, they're not very sweet.
No
dog treats. anyway, we should probably move on. Komatsu goes to the store. Like a big supermarket, and he asks Muko to leave out, you know, wait outside, and she's going to guard, I don't know what she's guarding, but she's going to guard whatever's outside and just, you know, stay where she's being asked. And Reina, the little girl who I've seen in episode 10, and these guys seen episode 6 and earlier as well.
I think we saw her in episode 7. I saw her in episode 7.
You saw her in episode 7?
Part of episode 6. Yeah, this was where I merged the two episodes.
Right.
See,
okay,
I was trying to think, when you were describing that, I was like, what is that? I don't remember that. And I was like, did that happen when I looked away or something? That's what I was thinking.
But he's on too much of a role to speak up. You didn't want her to disrupt his doggy.
Yeah, if you say something confidently, it sounds like the truth. So.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just making this entire episode up. she comes out and Muko panics. She's asleep. She thinks it's Komatsu. I've not been asleep. But it's the girl. She keeps calling her doggy. Muko doesn't really like this. she wants to, you know, paw. Is that what to call it? You know, get a dog's shake. Yeah, they even call it that in the show. She wants to shake the dog's hand, paw, and Mugo doesn't really know how. I don't know whether she just doesn't want to or doesn't really know how, but she offers a tail. Renna pulls on the tail.
It's back in the situation where, like, every now and again, Mugo doesn't understand English. It's like, shake. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what that is. What are you asking of me, kind of thing.
If Komatsu had asked, she'd have done it first time.
Well, no, he doesn't do any tricks, remember? Yeah. He thinks her only trick is salivating.
That's true. I think she's a good dog. She could do whatever she wants. But she gets a tail pulled. Renna's father comes along. She recognizes the smell.
Yeah.
Of him, whatever that is anyway. Cut to the next bit. Komatsu's trying to work on his glass blown and it's just far too hot. And, you know, when I was watching this, my mom had the radiator on downstairs as well and it was blasting. So I knew exactly how he felt.
You were getting 4D, yeah?
Yes. And it was too much. but he's got a lovely little fan in his work kind of lab. And Mugo finds it. Apparently, it's the first time she's seen a one, and she's quite excited. She's speaking or barking at it, and she comments that it's changing her voice, like fans do if you're speaking to a fan. So she's quite excited, and she gets chased out, and she's waiting outside. And she thinks, oh, I'll go in the pool. But she remembers, in the form of a silent film, that Komatsu doesn't like her going into the pond because she gets her snout squeezed really hard. If she does. Understandably, because, you know, what if something happened? But anyway, she decides to go in, she gets a little deeper, and out comes Komatsu, he's lurking, and she thinks she's going to get wrong, but no, he jumps in with her, and they're both, he says, it's the only time, mind you, and they have a nice little swim, and it's lovely. And it was great.
Yeah, so good I watched it twice.
It's such easy watching. Even if there's a dud in there somewhere, it's quickly blown over and she's being cute again. So yeah, lovely Mugo.
Best checking on Dwayne. Season. How do you do this week, Dwayne? You survive.
Dwayne watch.
Not great. And also, I was slightly more confused as to how you had described a thing that hadn't happened yet. And I was like, oh wait, Brian, watch this one as well. So all the episodes was wrong. Yeah. All the watching.
So, when we come back after Christmas, are we going to carry on doing this weekly or are we going to catch up all in one go over Christmas?
Oh, on Mugo?
Yes.
It's so easy. You could do it in, I think, 40 minutes?
Yeah, I think so.
I wouldn't be able to watch 40 minutes straight
away. That's like the best Christmas present ever.
Let's do it during the week, you know, just like, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there.
You could do it literally between anything else. You can leave it paused between stories and then, oh shit, I've got another segment of Mugo.
I just do one and then I'm saying, oh jeez, I need something to kind of do something else to vary it up a bit of Osamatsu. Okay, now we're going to look at Mugo again. No more of that. Okay, One Punch Man, go.
Oh, it is good to end with One Punch Man. You could end any day with that.
Mm. Anything you want to add, Niall, about lovely Mugo this week?
It's certainly Mugo up to her old tricks again. Oh, Komatsu, will you ever win?
Oh, the one thing I would say is how crude it looks, it actually works better on a phone. Because you don't feel like it's missing smaller, any detail.
Yeah.
Oh, so you've been watching it on your phone?
I watched this episode on the phone, yeah.
Okay.
For the first time.
I was having trouble with the Crunchyroll player today for some reason, which I know it's a bad day when the Crunchyroll player is working worse than a Daisuke player. but I didn't knock it down to HD to get it to work, and there was no discernible difference as far as I could tell.
Yeah. I don't think you're losing out in frames or anything.
I have to watch it on my phone, see if I can get a new experience with Mugo.
Mugo on the go.
Yeah.
Sneak and watch at work. Right. Let's move on to DD Fist of the North Star, episode 11, which I think just me and Niall watched.
Yeah.
And this episode's called Brothers Space and A Sudden Christmas Carol. So in Brothers Space, see Ryukin, the dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured. I wrote down his name at work, not in front of the screen. So I was like, what's his name? I think it's Ryuken. So yes, he hasn't got any ramen. And so he wants the brothers to go off and buy him some ramen. But as it's such an easy task to do, he's not going to let them become a student for doing it. So Rao and Ken refuse to do it, but Toki just says, oh, I guess I'll go off. And then demands like 1,000,000 yen because where he's going to buy the ramen is very expensive. But he eventually gets haggled down to just taking 1,000 yen. He's got to go and buy a 3-pack cheap from the supermarket, not the convenience store.
Yeah. Well, what I'm actually going to do is just run for the cash. You go after cash? No, you're not. You're going to go down to the corner shop and get them. I want change and a receipt, or it's your ass in the sling, mister.
And then he disappears for the rest of that story. And then he discovers that he's got some other instant noodles. What type is it? Do you remember, Niall?
It's yakisoba, which you know you get instantly.
So he goes off to prepare that, and as he's preparing that, he gets carried off by crows.
he gets bounced around off of the clock tower, hit off a plane in flight, and then, winds up on a precarious ledge.
Yeah, because he accidentally throws it out the window, doesn't he, and then chases after it, and him and the noodles get bounced everywhere until they're both carried off by crows, and then he's just left at the sort of the end of this gigantic weather vane on top of the roof of the school. Mm. And he's there for 50 days without anything noticing, because every time he cries for help, the sound effect, dung, 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 plays.
Dun, 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 dun. Do you hear screaming? No, all I'm hearing is dun, 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 dun. You're just kind of going, oh, no, I can't hear me down the ground.
And it also turns out that Yuria has built a treehouse on the other side. So when they finally makes contact after he tells the anime to stop playing the sound effect so he can call for help, the brothers try and rescue Yuria rather than him. But they are idiots, as per normal. And they keep on trying to run down to the end of the weather vane. Of course, it tips. And then they decide to fight as they argue over who's going to go fetch Ryuken and who's going to fetch Yuria. And then it all ends up with them and Yuria getting catapulted into space. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much that first story.
It's a competition in space. It's like, damn you, Kenshiro, man. I told you I was someone who would rescue Yuria because I love her the same as you. No, more than you. And then the wife shows up. And like, what were you saying there about being in love with Yuria? I said, I didn't say that.
And you can tell Rao got serious because he put his helmet on this episode. Mm. And then the second episode, Toki inadvertently becomes Santa when he steals a loaf, hides in a house, meets more girl. Is she from Fist of the North Star?
She is from Fist of the North Star too. I don't know from the original series.
Yeah, I couldn't remember her name, and so I think when I looked it up, I spelt it wrong.
It was Maneko.
Yeah, something like that.
I get a quick look at it.
And so she's sad that Santa's. Well, she's happy that Santa's come to visit her because her parents have abandoned her. And he tries to convince her that he's not Santa. Santa's just somebody who your parents make. It's just your parents pretending. But then when the people chasing after him do this loaf he's stolen turn up, he then starts to pretend to be Santa. And then another Santa turns up. And who's playing the other Santa?
It's Amiba, who is the fake Toki. So it's a double fake Santa.
And so he pays him off in order to convince the girl that he's Santa by using his Santa beams to destroy him. And then the parents turn up, and they're also dressed as Santa, and they've also been stealing things. They've stolen a Christmas... Oh, he says he's going to go off and steal a Christmas cake for the little girl. And then when he steps out, her parents, who both have mustaches, are running back with a Christmas cake, and... he volunteers to pretend to be the Santa who stole the cake in order to say they can celebrate Christmas. And they also steal the loaf of bread off him. Well, convince him to give it to them. And then the police show up, and then the guy stole the bread from whose heart and a couple of other guys. And they all start pulling him backwards and forwards trying to take him away. As we see inside the house, that the parents have stolen far more than just this Christmas cake.
Yep.
They've got ridiculous things like a diamond ring, I think is the final punchline.
Yeah.
And then in Strawberry Flavor, South has his first milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
Does he like it?
Well, he's struggling with it because they're having like a very serious discussion among like the six star secret generals. They're all kind of meeting. Everyone's saying, "Okay, guys, no, we should probably reconsider our strategy here. How about we get together under the banner of the final six star gentleman and like Yuda and Shinigot? No way, I'm not gonna like take order from somebody else." Then Chu and Ray up and saying, "No, come on, guys. No, it's probably a good idea." Like, I don't want to have this kind of serious discussion now. There's Stout driving over with this milkshake. This is going, he can't seem to drink it properly. He's just going, like, he's like interrupting what they're doing. And then Ray finally goes, "Well, someone take that thing off him because get it out. It's really messing up the discussion right now."
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think my favorite segment was Ryuken getting carried off and put on the weather vane.
Yeah.
Just because it was just so stupid.
And being there for that length of time in which, in that amount of time, like a new brood of little crow chicks has been laid and hatched and I think left the nest in that time.
And also Bat just decides once he's carried off, means I can go home then. Mm. And they all leave the school. I don't think he shows up for the rest of the episode after that. Mm. Right, let's move on to Christmas Osomatsu-san. Which is Osomatsu-san and episode 11. Who wants to take a crack at the synopsis, or shall we just try and remember which sketches?
There's so many sketches.
Yeah.
It's kind of taken a form of like the one they did for episode 3, where it's like a collection of just short little bits.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try and count these off as well. The opening I thought was great in how, like, I was like, oh, brilliant, settling down to a nice Christmas episode of Osomatsu. And then it goes horrible, like, straight away. That was pretty great.
They all kind of turned into
zombies. Halloween, Christmas.
Yes, various monsters.
It's like, oh my God. What was it? Their parents were like, oh my God, their lack of anything to do on Christmas Eve has caused them to go crazy or something. We're like, I'm talking like heads rolling off and eyeballs falling out kind of shit.
Yeah.
That was really horrible.
Ray stuff.
Yeah. Gross.
What else happens? I've written down, there was a sketch with them giving each other presents.
That was a fucking great one, yeah. The little weird thing they have. They're all dressed as their own color Santa.
Yeah.
It's awesome that it gets to be red, obviously. But the whole thing of, is it Choromatsu, is just like, what's with this fucking atmosphere, guys? This is super weird. They're all just like, and now it's time for the Christmas party. Hooray. Pass the present. They were just saying die, die, die as they passed the present around. That was wonderful.
And then they're all dreading which present they've got based on.
It's like, oh, I got his one. He'll sort me out. It's like, oh, fuck, I got that guy. I hate that guy.
I got Juicy Matsu. He could be anything at all. Oh, man.
And despite what the shapes they were all pretty much exactly the same present.
They were all exactly the same present. It was the same girl.
All like erotic postcards. I presume from a series. Now they have the whole set.
Oh, okay.
They can't afford DVDs.
There was a bit like, you know, where there was a nice couple on a date, and they're sitting down in the parking on Christmas Eve, and then they're approached by a Santa dressed in black, Ichimatsu, and he's just like sits down next to them, inquiring about their evenings, and
it's just being super awkward,
very unsettling.
That's such a weird sketch. Hard lad, so strange.
It's like, he's kind of like, hey, how's it going? Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas! And there's happy Christmas. And then he's like, well, I'm taking this as a cue to sit down. And he's like, do you know this guy? He's like, no, I don't know this motherfucker. It's super weird. And it's him I like every time they try and say something nice and they try and be natural and stuff, and it just cuts back to his dead stare. It's pretty good.
He's more kind of like, you know, well, you know, so you guys out on a date? You guys out on a date? Yes, Brock. I'm assuming he's taking some kind of displeasure in the fact that they're having a lovely time and, you know, he's low on Christmas Eve and
he's clearly pissed at them just for existing.
But like he's back Santa Claus, so it's like maybe he's like, you know, rather than giving you something, he makes you like thankful for what you have. Just kind of reading it through that way.
What's that English Santa Claus? He's like he's like a Santa Claus who dresses in black, and it's kind of like a Krampus type situation. Oh, I can't think of his name.
I don't know.
Bad Santa.
It's probably just something like that.
I know in my Marvel Superheroes role-playing game campaign, I had a character called Harvey Christmas. He was the Anti-Claus, but I'm pretty sure that's not who you're thinking of.
I don't think that's the
Any sketches you remember, Anthony?
I'm trying to remember. I remember the passing the... Oh, of course! No, the good one! The main one, where they take the girl out.
It's the handsome...
Osamatsu.
From popular Osamatsu show.
Episode 1.
I missed that design.
It's gone now.
I
like them bringing it back for jokes. So.
Yeah, yeah. So they're all taken. What's that girl called again?
They're referencing something.
Kotoko.
They're referencing something that people may never see.
Watch legally.
We've got to wait and see what the new episode 1.
That's true. They could be referencing something that hasn't happened yet.
Oh, they're going to reference that original episode.
I'm sure they will indeed.
Yeah.
Like, despite the color-coded hair that they have in that, I constantly forget which one's which because they all look the fucking same.
Well, they've got slightly different personalities that match to some degree.
I just have to wait for them to start doing something. It's like, he's climbing that up. Oh, well, that's Jushimatsu. Okay.
But yeah, they take the girl out. Well, one of them takes the girl out.
Charamatsu.
Yeah, I still don't know who's who. I only know Karamatsu.
Charamatsu's the guy who thinks he's smart but isn't.
Well, yeah. I know him now. Like, you know, this is a lot easier to watch episode 1. Where, like, no, I know him all now by voice and also by color and personality.
Yeah,
so.
Personality mostly, yeah.
Okay. But yeah, they take the girl to this... one of them takes the girl and he says, look at this... And he's set up this huge Christmas light display. And basically the next one turns up and just escalates and escalates. And I was dying laughing actually when obviously with it escalating, you know, he lights up the city and it spells out, I love you on a building. And it goes a little bit beyond and a bit beyond. And then the camera pans right out. Every light on earth goes off and it's just. They come on in order of her face. How did she even see it?
Yeah.
But she likes it. She likes it all the same.
Yeah.
They start flying around and basically they say, oh, well, at least we can all have a tonight kind of thing. We'll all have our date. And it's quite a sweet moment.
Where they destroy all the love hotels in the town.
Yeah, yeah.
With the power of their love or something. Or horniness, I'm not entirely sure.
Or they're just flying straight through them.
They're flying straight through them in a flying V, I guess.
Yeah.
I liked Ishimatsu's thing of just being naked in a cabin. I was just like, well, there's a shot of his arse. And also he remains naked while flying. Yeah. Just wearing a blanket, like.
But what was the next sketch? Well, I always forget. My name remembering is terrible, but. That was the weirdest one, where the two dudes are drinking.
There was one in between there, I think.
Yami is redoing the little matchstick girl. They must really like that, John.
They're constantly doing
it, yeah. And he lights the match, and he gets a vision of Dion devouring everything in a house.
His family.
It's like a child Dion. It's kind of weird. And then, I think the one after that was Decapan and Dion, where they
end up together in a hotel.
Yes.
So the whole thing is them getting drunk and having a great party and having a good time. And then do they go to like a strip club or something? What exactly was happening?
I think it's a love hotel.
With each other.
Yes.
Okay. We're not going to do any better than this. Because they get the stern faces, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what's going on.
They reach a new level of camaraderie.
Yeah, it's done in the same sort of nonsense talk mime as the previous sketch we had.
Easy Rider.
It's kind of in the same thing, because they just make the... What does a Decaban noise? And Dion just said, you know, his standard thing.
Then, I can't remember if this is before... There's a bit where they go begging... to Totoko to date them. I think that's after.
I think that's after.
No, I think that's, is that like the post credits one or?
No, there's the Juicy Matsu wanting to meet Santa one.
Yes.
Oh yes.
I love that one. Because this big fucking, like, you know, child eyes, like, glinting. It's like, ah, oh, just looking at a sock on the line, waiting for Santa to fill it.
And there's the bit where they're all sitting round with at the...
Chibita's Odin stand.
Yeah, Chibita's Odin stand.
I was like, oh, yeah, I'm totally going to have a girlfriend next year. And he's like, dudes, you're not. That's bullshit. You know it.
And they say, oh, money doesn't matter. And then... Yeah, Mr. Flag shows up in his giant gold boats.
Troy money off the side of it.
We're going to Finland! It's just like...
And I do like how they've spelt Mr. Flag two different ways on the boat.
Mr. Flag!
if you can't decide which way to spell it.
I think that's pretty much all the beats. I'm sure there's some we missed, because there's a lot of sketches. It kind of felt like they were trying to hit the beats of all the previous different episodes in the
Yeah, because they were making references to some other ones as well. Like, so yeah. Jeez, I'm not even sure how many sketches it was altogether. It was quite shotgun.
Yeah, because they make reference to the Starbucks episode, don't they?
Yeah. It's like, what happened to those girls? It's like, they didn't call me back for some reason. It's like, why not? What the fuck do you think? It also had another Dion's counseling session.
Yes.
That was pretty great.
Yeah, where,
Kusumatsu.
Oh, is hoping that he'll, get more respect in the second season.
I did like that because that was the thing is like, geez, they treat that guy like awful shit. And then it's just like, we're getting mail that people are complaining that I'm getting treated so shit. You know, come on, guys. And it's like, nah, that's not going to happen. He's still going to get the crap beat out of him the whole time.
But, maybe the most Christmassy episode of any Christmas episodes we've watched.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, next week that will be our Christmas episode where we watch nothing but Christmas episodes.
And this one was more Christmassy.
Putting
up with your family.
it's the least Christmas spirity one, but it is certainly very Christmassy. It's not like, wow, Christmas is great, isn't it? It's like, fuck Christmas is essentially the entire episode.
Yeah, this is more Christmassy than a two-part Gintama story where five Santas duel to decide who is the real Santa.
Yeah, sounds pretty
which also references the little matchstick girl.
But more about that next week.
Mm.
Spoiler alert for an episode we already recorded. But yeah, this was good. Enjoyed it.
Not hitting you.
Me and this show will have a good week. We'll get on really well. Then we'll have a not so good week.
Was there one sketch you liked? Because if there was one...
Yeah, I like that one I mentioned. The one where they've got like the episode one designs. I like that.
I think that's what they're aiming for. It's like, you're bound to like one of these things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like a selection box.
Yeah.
Right. If that's Osamatsu-san wrapped up, let's get...
It's
a concrete revolution.
It's a concrete pal.
The Illusion of Destiny, episode 10. Mm. We open in the 25th century.
Oh, no.
What a fucking great opener. It's just like, hey, remember all those other timelines? Yeah, fuck that shit. Pass that now.
Where we meet Super Jaguar, or as it's pronounced in the episode, Super Jagger. Where he's being sent back to 1968 for a week. He's being equipped sort of with his currency and his time watch. And apparently he's got to go back because somebody's breaking time law in the past.
Also, is it, I guess this is going to come up later, it seems like a younger him, and he also seems to fancy his commanding officer or whoever she is.
It's definitely a younger him.
Yeah, it seemed like he was younger. Just I don't know if they're drawing the hair smaller to show age.
No, well, it becomes clear in the attitudes between this version and then the more, I guess, established one in the regular timeline.
Yeah. Or, as it turns out, the two established ones in the regular timeline.
What?
And then we hit the opening credits, and then when we get back, and the Bureau are watching... The police deal with a hostage situation. A old man's taken two superhumans hostage because they'd been conning him. And all seems to be going.
I wasn't aware that they were conning him. I didn't really know why he was taking them hostage.
I think they say they were scamming him. Or they were doing some sort of scam.
It looked like the kind of dynamite he was wearing around him was just sausages with string put in it. I don't know if that was supposed to just make him look like he was supposed to be wearing bombs. I'm not sure what the deal was.
But he's got a gun, so.
He does have a gun, so yeah, he's not fucking around. He's got a rifle.
And yeah, so everything seems going smoothly when this group called IQ show up.
Yeah, Thunderbird 2 shows up.
Yeah, oh, I forgot to write down in my notes. I'll put it in Twitter. So there's a series by the guy who created Ultraman, which was heavily influenced by Thunderbirds, and that's
Is it Mighty Pat?
That's Mighty Jack, I think.
Mighty Jack, sorry, their ship is called Mighty Pat or something, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's what that is, yes. But it is obviously Thunderbird 2 influenced in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of turn up, kill everybody. They're all
just fucking murder everyone.
While this is happening, though, Kiko sees Jaguar by the river and then goes back and sees another Jaguar in his normal clothes with the rest of the Bureau.
Yeah, like initially I was like, wait, I got to rewind this shit, because like, is he in the parking lot and also not in the parking lot at the same time? And I was like, oh, fuck, he's crossing his own timeline, man. You're not supposed to do that.
Back at the Bureau office, we've got the ninja cop.
Yes.
Who's turned up to say, we think your colleague is the leader of IQ.
I think his name is Red Light, which is a fucking amazing ninja cop name.
Yeah, I can't remember what series. He's a combination of, again, I can't remember. I forgot to write down the series. There is
I have the notes open here. He's from Akage, Mass Ninja Akage. And
Yeah, what's the other one called?
Phantom Agents, I think.
Yeah, something along those lines. Yeah. Yeah, because I was figured there must have been a show about ninja cops. I mean, I'm surprised there's not more shows about ninja cops.
I mean, like, you see this guy's little fucking ninja division of cops, and it's just like, I want to watch them solve crimes using crazy ninja tricks.
Should say last week's trailer was completely deceptive.
Oh, yeah.
It put over Jaguar's voiceover in front of this guy's animation, so it made it look like he was the guy from the Time Patrol.
Yeah, well, when the ninja cop shows up to confront the Bureau, he's actually dressed as Jiro. Yeah,
yes,
he's got the thing where he has his face on over, and yet he can move his mouth, even though he's wearing like a ninja mask over his own mouth.
Mission Impossible mask.
Yeah, that kind of job.
I think Jaguar flees at this point after turning into his cat form.
Well, I think he tries to flee, but don't they?
Oh yeah, maybe they stop Jiro him.
Pins him to the wall with some Jiro knives.
Oh, also we see Jiro has another eye because he's standing on the ceiling on one point.
Yes. and so does he explain things here, or is he just explaining it to Kiko?
I think he explains part of it here. That like I think the chief basically covers for him. I keep calling him the chief. Yeah. I can't remember his name. He says like, oh, he's working undercover, infiltrating the organization.
At this point, I think I'm just going to stop talking about the episode bit by bit, and let's get into the central.
Yeah, because it's too confusing to try and hide what they were hiding kind of from it.
So, we should also say what Kiko did when she saw the superfluous Jaguar by the river.
That was smart.
Was beat him up and tie him up and take him to a house.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. I'm beginning to think Kiko's a little more than she seems, but Yeah, that was an entirely competent thing to do. It's like, what? Two of them? I'll catch that one.
Oh, yeah. This is peak Kiko competence.
Yeah.
in this episode. Yes. So, turns out Jaguar was sent back in time, 1968, for a week. At that point, he either saw something during that week or learned something when he went back to the future.
He was sent back. Like, the Jaguar received from the 25th century, it was sent back for a week. And to stop some organization or something like that.
Yes.
And when he goes back to the future, he's like, wait a minute, we don't have superhumans here. What happened?
Yeah. And at that point, he decides that he's going to do something about saving superhumans. Mm. And so then he went further back in time himself and founded the group IQ and started assassinating figures that he sees as evil, who we should say aren't necessarily people we as people living in our world would necessarily see as evil.
Yeah,
he's killing Bobby Kennedy,
RFK, Martin Luther King,
Martin Luther King, and Che Guevara.
Yeah, again, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, kind of thing. Yeah,
And so as he's explaining to, is it Earl, the little... Yes.
Oh, the little doll guy.
Yeah, the little doll thing that time travel, when you go back, you're sort of overwriting time.
Yeah.
So he means he's gone back, and then in 1968 again, he bumps into another one of himself who's now been sent back to stop him. It's now him. He's the person who's messing around with time.
The one that went back for a week in the 60s.
Yes.
When he went back the first time, there wasn't an evil terrorist organization.
There might have been something else.
Yeah, there might have been something else he was sent to stop or some something similar. So when that guy who went back for a week got older, he went back further and set up a terrorist organization that guy is now trying to stop?
Yes. Yeah, but he then bumps into him.
And it's then really confusingly
the act of bumping into him then makes him realize this IQ thing isn't working out.
Yeah.
Because this, maybe even the act of the other one being sent back tells him that something, he hasn't changed the future yet.
The fact that I was sent back in my youth to stop me when I got older, it means this wasn't going to work out, so I'll stop doing that. So what I'll do instead is I'll go further back and set up the superhuman bureau.
Yeah.
Which is what he was trying to stop the second time he tried to go back, the first time he tried to go back to change history. It's like, oh, I got to destroy that superhuman bureau. They're up to no good. It's like, no.
Is it specific make... that? I don't think we know.
No, exactly I thought he went back and he found an IQ, you know, because he thought, I'm going to, like, you know, solve problems of the future and the future crime by taking out elements of evil and everything. But he was still, you saw over time, that's a very simplistic point of view to have. It doesn't kind of fix anything. Actually quite relevant to what's going on in the world today right now.
That's quite relevant.
The best thing to do is to try and, like, set up some kind of system or organization that can, like, you know, either, like, help or rehabilitate or kind of, you know, keep tabs on these people and kind of sort of minimize any kind of damage or threat that they can do. And, you know, have our own assets then to deal with any sort of kind of threats as well, you know, to deploy that.
But when the second youngest version of him sees this superhuman bureau, he thinks they are capturing superhumans and killing them, which is why younger him attacks the superhuman bureau that older him set up currently in the 1960s.
Yes, yeah, because this, we'll get to that in a bit.
It's kind of confusing
that's where he doesn't come quite as good. We also hints that he doesn't come out and say, but he kind of hints that maybe rather than a man who's been given Jaguar powers, he's a Jaguar man powers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's suggesting that the reason there aren't any superhumans is because there ain't humans. Everything's evolved animals now. Or, you know, genetically engineered animals. This is what he's suggesting.
Yeah, or the genetically engineered animals to send them back in time.
Yeah.
Because it's asking Kiko, okay, out of those two, which is the most messed up?
a really nice effect in this. I love when he turns into the Jaguar that his pants just kind of split, you know, like those pants with like the buttons on them.
Yeah.
He knows.
That's really useful.
Hardy boy opened his piece. Eh?
But he decides that he's going to have to kill his younger self and then wipe himself out.
Yeah.
But Kiko forces a paradox to be created because he's explained that if there's a big enough paradox that time can't deal with removing that, it will just let that thing exist.
He explained the grandfather paradox. If you killed the monkey that evolved into humans, how could you do that? Because... That would kind of mess with time a bit, but he was just saying, I'll just probably cease to exist because I'm like really... I'm not that important. Yeah.
So Kiko takes the watch to Jiro's dad and says, study this. And then he takes the young one's watch.
Yeah. It's the young one that she caught at the... Yes. Early on in the episode, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's now, like, this will take years to figure out this technology.
Now, here's the question. Here's various questions I have.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so... First of all, he makes that speech about how he's matured, and
that was really interesting to me. Yeah.
But there's a line earlier on from Amy when he's building the kick-eye for Jiro.
Yeah, he's building the
She says something about you wouldn't build it if you were truly mature. You wouldn't be building it to look like that.
It's like, you don't. Why are you making him a mecha? That's so fucking childish, dude.
Yes, and this is supposed to be. Boys and
their toys, I think she says at one point. You know.
Yeah, this is basically the more mature Jaguar.
Yeah,
and the other thing is, he never stops himself assassinating anybody until the Bureau itself is threatened. He's quite happy to let IQ.
Well, he knows he did that. That's the thing. He can't not know he didn't. He can't. It's like, well, yeah. I actually fucking did those things. I can't stop myself from having done those things because I did them. I did them. That kind of thing.
Yeah. But it's not until, but once the Bureau itself is threatened, then he actually does decide to do something.
Yeah, because basically the IQ was, he set up trying to solve the problem in one regard. That didn't work out. So he set up the Bureau as an alternative. And since that's currently his plan, he's gotten rid of plan A and plan B is the Bureau. He's going to stick with plan B.
But the other thing is, here's the other thing. Yeah. Okay. Maybe stick to plan B. That's probably why he doesn't just shoot the young one.
Yeah.
Cause something in this mature one still wants IQ to go back. And kill these evil people.
It was still his plan. I mean, like, he probably still has some stock in it. Yeah.
It could be that, or it could be something as simple as, no, I don't want to confront other me because I know if I do confront him, one of us have to die. And then even if I kill him, I'll kill myself as well.
But if the young him meets the older him, he goes like, wait, so this shit doesn't work out that I'm doing right now? And then that changes the timeline, you know?
Yeah, I'm saying when he's in the room with Kiko in the youngest one, why does he choose to go and face the leader of IQ rather than just killing the youngest one, where if he believes in the paradox, that would wipe out the IQ one and him.
That's true.
I think he does still want IQ.
That makes sense to give IQ version him a chance to actually beat him. Because he does, like, they're both there with their little ray guns and shit.
And maybe he wasn't sure enough, or maybe there was something in that point of view, and we'll find out right now which is the right one.
It seems like it's possible he's resigned himself to the only way this can logically work out in terms of like avoiding paradoxes is if the younger me kills the older me, because that doesn't create a paradox.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought that's what was going to happen. So when he kills the second youngest version of himself, he figured, oh, I'm going to be wiped out now, but I'm cool with this, because he's already kind of figured he's going to die, however this goes. That just a guess, like.
Yeah, he still comes across fairly. You kind of like him watching it, and then when you think about it, you think,
it's just the fucked upness of time travel, dude.
Yeah, but it's presented especially fucked up. That's why I kick it in the right thing. If you see a time traveler, beat him up.
Arrest on sight.
Yes.
Yeah, the fact that you're willing to go back and interfere with time means you have some fucking moral scruples or lack of. In the first place, I think, is basically what it's trying to say. It's like, time travelers are morally compromised. Don't fucking time travel.
Do you think that the youngest Super Jaguar, when he goes back now, is he still going to go back to become IQ Jaguar? Or is
the thing is, I think since they know what he goes back and does twice, I think the Jaguar we're used to, the eldest Jaguar, is existing kind of outside of his own timeline.
Yeah.
Whereas that Super Jaguar is going to be his own character.
Yeah, because I can just say that thing because he is now sort of this new paradox is based around him.
He's a paradox that's small, but it needs to exist in order for
a
larger paradox to not happen.
Yeah, he said, I am now an indispensable asset of time or of the timeline. So his existence is sort of, you know, would be necessary, you know, so no matter what happens, you know, it'll all happen like around him, but he won't be affected by any other paradoxes. So,
yeah, because as he exists now, he exists as a paradox. So it's possible the younger him could go on to not create IQ and continue to work in the, was it time police? Or
something along those lines. Yeah. Or he could go back and do something entirely different.
Yeah, he could try fucking plan C.
But yeah, the other thing is Jaguar is not entirely honest with Kiko because we know that he's done much more time traveling than this based on the Sazae-san episode. Because we see him go back to all different sorts of points of time. It's like
when I say the Bureau was plan B, he might have been trying some several fucking things along the way. We don't know how many of this shit he's been up to. Like, it's kind of like when you're willing to kill younger you, it's kind of like, I've done a lot of shit.
And of course, the other question is the post-split Jaguar still this Jaguar? Or is he a different, another time travel Jaguar?
He seems like kind of conniving enough to be.
Yeah, I think it is. Jaguar. The other thing is, I was thinking that they should do a Doraemon, and then I realized, oh, he's already, we've got a time traveling cat.
Yeah. So. It's good. They're good for that.
It was yellow. Or was Dwemer originally yellow? So
he was.
All they have to do, right, is give him like a pocket where he can pull anything out of, and then
the witch spots it.
Yeah, and he probably has that technology now.
But yeah, this was a great episode because it finally gave us a clear motive for one of the characters.
Yeah.
We know why the Bureau is so protective of superheroes is because Jaguar wants superheroes to exist in the 25th century.
I found it fascinating that the second youngest him, the one, the terrorist him essentially, yeah. Found the Equus to be like really childish. It's like, dude, did you fucking design a mecha? That's so fucking childish. I just designed a big ass gun because gun is all you need. Did he design Equus because Jiro is kind of childish in his mentality in terms of like justice and there's good and bad, you know, that kind of thing? Or did he design it that way because he's trying to, based off his speech at the end towards himself, that's confusing, speech he was having with himself, he was saying it's childish to think you can just shoot your problems with a gun, and it's less childish to build a giant robot to fight evil.
Yes. Well, I think he's more like adolescent in the IQ.
Versions. Yeah,
it's like the guy. It's like the people who say, "Yeah, people who read Batman and say, why didn't Batman just kill the Joker?"
Yeah,
easy.
It's something like that. I thought that speech was really interesting. The way he's matured into a person who thinks that, yeah, fucking giant robots, dude, they're awesome.
Talking of Kikai's and Jiro, I bought the first volume of Kikeda on Comixology because. Kikeda's human identity is called Jiro. I'm sure there's more than various similarities going to
I doubt there's fucking coincidence at this stage. Definitely. Yeah.
And next week, everything starts falling apart as we head towards the season finale.
Quick thing just on references. The members of IQ, they were... what were they referencing with their flying motorbikes? And
yeah, some people were saying Wild 7, but I think there's some Wild 7 in the ninjas as well.
I'd say ninjas more so than Tokyo's.
Yeah. The only thing I can think is, you know, in Thunderbirds where they didn't want to animate, or I'd rather puppeteer them walking, so they just put them on flying sleigh all the time?
Yeah, that's probably more like it, because Wild 7's 69, so it seems... Yeah.
They're
generally quite good at making the core reference
be of the time.
Time appropriate. As we'll get to next week when we get a character who's just a ton of references. But I think there's enough of him to tie himself to a 67-68 cartoon series. Okay, we're back.
Still no idea what's
happening. Hey, we're watching it. We haven't got much idea either.
Yeah.
But there is season 2, so that's a relief. Confirmed for April. So, I'm hoping that's like set in the 70s more firmly, and then we get like flashbacks to the 60s
as opposed to the way it is now. Yeah, that would be interesting actually. If kind of our base show became the 70s and we're looking back at stuff, I guess kind of like Lost, where now stuff has more relevance, whereas now we're just seeing flashes to the future. It's like, and here's what's going to happen. And it's like, yeah, but why does it happen?
Here's the start of a fight. We're not going to show you the end of it. We're going to show you the most amazing start to a fight we've got to put in the cartoon.
Man, if they skip over that fight. Oh, dear.
Also, I wonder whether he'll do that because I was like, what does the word concrete have to do? And I was looking up about concrete poetry, where a lot of it's also to do with the form of the way the poem's printed.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether
I was thinking that in terms of like construction and how this show is basically like, you could totally do this show in a straight fucking line and it'd be fine and it'd be interesting. But I think the fact that you know he's going to go out of the Bureau makes it more interesting. And it's kind of like to see that journey. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's interesting to see where thing goes and the interest you have in the show is how it gets there.
Yeah. Yes. And I've watched next week's episode already. It goes some places next week. Jeez. Right, let's go to episode 11. The Dominator of the Universe of One Punch Man. Who wants to take charge of this?
I vote Niall. He does a good job.
I do.
Well volunteered, Niall.
All right.
I'm sorry, Niall. You just do a good job.
What? That's okay, right? So previously on One Punch Man, a spaceship had emerged over City A and blasted into rubble. And there are alien beasties swarming around on the ground, and it's up to some Class S heroes to try and like deal with this mess. While all that's going on, Saitama has infiltrated the alien spacecraft by his lonesome, and is just basically busting his way down through the wall, killing anything he finds in hope of finding like the boss of these guys who may be able to give him a good fight. And he's obviously making like national news, and we're seeing some nice little things of like the villains at home. We're seeing Hammerhead at home with his family filling out a application name Hammerhead. So
it's Hammerhead. Yeah,
we're seeing the mad scientist from House of Evolution, and I guess his sole surviving creation, Armored Kong, minus the armorless at home. They're just having lunch and a bit shocked by this news happening going on there.
They're both wearing hilarious octopus. Abram as well. That's fucking brilliant.
So we have Speed of Sound Sonic as well. Now he's taking doing a little bit of polishing and maintenance on his sword, you know. And
that's not a euphemism.
Yep. You see, you know, all these Class S heroes who engage in combat with this alien menace, and he just does his lovely smile. So we go to our Class S heroes now, and they're dealing with. What's it called? Melzargard?
I think it is Melzargard.
Something crazy.
They all have really hard to fucking say names.
Yeah. This multi-headed menace, can spontaneously regenerate. Having a tough time with that. Also on the spaceship, the boss, the real big boss, the Cyclopean, Lord Boros has, come onto the bridge, you know, just trying to inquire, hey, what's going on down the ground? And, his second in command, Technic Octopus Jelly Dude, who's got a weird name I can't remember.
Yeah.
Genryu Gan
Goopil
Shoop.
I'm gonna call him Gary.
Yeah,
all right.
That's fine.
Much more tenacious than I thought it would be, my lord, but no fear, it's all on hand, you know. An intruder has come on board, and he's smashing everything up, and he's like, you know, he's kind of killing any minds, but he's only destroyed, you know, this kind of the crew's quarters now, like the power sphere of the quarter ship, you know, is still safe. I say, okay, well.
I did like that because we're mostly seeing Saitama, instead of him just wandering around punching things, we're seeing him look at security cameras going like, oh fuck. This fucking guy. And then the boss comes in and just like, shit, sorry boss.
Yeah.
This guy.
Okay, well, Gary, you and Milzar Guard and, like, Acid Hand Venus Flytrap Man, you all get it, go take care of it. Oh, actually, sir, Acid Hand Venus Flytrap Man is already dead, so it's just me and Milzar Guard on the ground. He's already busy with those tough guys. I'm going to say, oh, okay, well, but don't worry about it. You go about it, do your thing, and you just sit in your throne and we'll take care of it. And, you know, he's just Boros, is aspiring, Saitama on the cameras there, and he's got a little flush in the eye. He's taking some interest in this dude. Now he's caused this much trouble for him already. You know, maybe it could be something we're looking out for. Anyways, the guys on the ground having a lot of trouble with this, regenerating guy, you know, as much as they punch him or destroy him or shoot him or anything like that now, this can't be taken care of. And Belzar Gary is having like, you know, he's getting impatient with him. These guys just won't stop trying at all. Although like, call up to the cop to the ship now to just bombard it and get it over with. So he's kind of is one of his many heads detaches off and sprouts some bat wings, but kind of fly back up and, you know, and completely get back with him. But Metal Bat's on the case and he just smacks that thing down to the ground. But it regenerates again and starts from trash talking him. And it's like, well, you can regenerate as much as you want, bat heads. I'm going to keep like smacking you up until you stop regenerating. So they're battling away, like, and I think what's it now? Yeah, he busts the head open again. He does a little thing, like a marble comes out. And just before the bat guy can like regenerate again back into his main pieces, he shuts his marble up and says, what's this thing? Huh, it's probably important to you. Yeah, it's based on your reaction because the bat guy, his face just falls like that. So he smashes it and the bat head just dissolves, dies immediately. So he calls over to the guys, hey guys, just like, you know, if while you're like smashing that dude up and cutting the piece like that, if you see any marbles, like snatch those out, because those were his weakness apparently. And the guy set to work on doing that.
oh, it was Mel's a girl to say. It was like, it took me 100 years to grow that head.
Oh man.
I did like it as well. When he separates it from, like, he's formed all his head into like one head. He has to take out a pair of eyes each time he wants to make a separate piece. And also he has multiple sets of teeth.
Yeah. All of his teeth.
Yeah. It's kind of like each marble has its own set of eyes and teeth.
Right. Saitama continues his rampage on the UFO. We're getting that shot that you kind of mentioned there last week, Brian, about where it zooms down. We're kind of seeing the map of the inside of the ship zooming in further and further. We get to get a little dot where Saitama is.
And it wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
Well, so it's not going to look as good, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So Gary is like, no, comedian can't invite Technesis to Saitama and say, hey, what are you doing? You're busting the ship up and saying, hey, sorry, dude, I'm just trying to find a way out of here. You know, I've been smashing
walls.
I
thought he was on the ship's intercom. Yeah. It's just like,
can't do it. Can't find a way out. And Gary's like, oh, okay, well, if we just want to find a way out, well, no, you're at a kind of like a branching path right now. If you take a ride and keep going on up those stairs now, you'll be right on your way. And there's, look of glee, if you can call it that, passing with the time of space is going, go to the right, I think I'll go to the left instead. Carries on. No, don't come this way. Don't come this way.
that was a brilliant bit. It's just like, dude, come on. Seriously, that's like the oldest trick.
But I do like how desperate Gary Ugenshu is.
In this good job.
Yeah, he's like, all he wants is for this bald guy to leave the spaceship.
Yeah. It's like I said, most of it, we see Saitama from his perspective, just going like, oh my God. Like, it's just him having a really shitty day at work, essentially. And your man calling him from the ground is like, hey, give me a bombardment thing. It's like, that's like the lower guys. I mean, like, I'll pass the order down. It's like fucking telling me what to do.
You'd think he'd be a better judge of character and like person when he's psychic as well, but he still gets fooled by Saitama.
Down ground, the heroes having some progress taking out the heads on Mazzararo guard. They've gone down, you know, gone down to a couple of heads by now.
I think he's like two heads or so left, yeah.
Yeah. But the orphan bombardment has gone through, and the rain comes down, even though there's a UFO, they're still using, like, you know, just large ballistic shells. I don't know. Why wouldn't they use, like, laser guns or anything like that? But hey,
if it works.
That's the thing, I think. But I'm going to wish they had used lasers, because, you know, the guys think, you know, we can't knock out that many, like, shells all at once, so we're screwed. But luckily, a tornado of terror is on the case, and, you know, with a flick of her wrist, uses the psychic powers and launches the shells back up into the UFO and blowing massive holes in it. Things are looking good for them, all things being considered. Saitama finds his way to the bridge. He's like, no, oh, you're the boss here? No, I am. I am Gary, the psychic octopus jelly man from beyond the stars now, and you will pay for what you've done. Taste my psychic powers, gravity well. And the gravity is increased in the room exponentially. All the crew men are just like knocked to the ground. They can't even stand up. Saitama just sinks a few feet into the floor, but he seems unfazed by the whole thing.
Think of him going like, do you know what a black hole does to a body? And he's just like, what the fuck is it? It's like, damn, it just is like there. And he's just like, and then he raises a hand up and just scratches his face. It's just like, it's the kind of thing where it's like, whoa, has he been held down at all? It's like, no, he's just standing there.
And he's like, no, not good enough for you. Well, how about this cosmic debris storm? Wow, wow, wow. And he's like, you know, levitating this kind of small pebbles and bits of rocks in the room, and this, I assume, accelerating them, you know, to near light speed, so to destroy.
Well, they're all lighting up, yeah.
And Saitama just catches one of these bits of chunks of shrapnel, and he's like, "What the about the second pass? Well, this is a waste second pass. You're just throwing rocks. Anyway, I can throw rocks. See, I'm gonna do it right now." And he just tosses the rocks, and this goes right between the eyes of Gary. He dies immediately.
Oh, Gary.
Yeah, I think the Tatsumaki scene comes after that, because it's kind of like her power is very similar to his. I think it's,
but
like,
way better.
We see his is useless.
And then he's not using his good, and she just blows up their whole ship with their own weapons.
Well, she's not against Saitama, so perhaps hers is average. Do you reckon Gary is like Whis to Lord Boros? He's the Whis of
I think it might well be.
Yeah. But, so, I would hate to see Whisk.
Not as powerful.
No, no.
In that case, in this scenario, is Boris the little kid? Or?
No, Boris is Beerus.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's meant Whis from, yeah.
Oh, Yo-Kai Watch.
I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Too many Whises. It's your double here, four Whises.
That must make Bells, Garland, and Jimmy
Yams. Now we're getting down a dark black hole.
Yeah, someone on Twitter reminded me that Tatsumaki is actually 28 years old.
Is she?
Yes.
Yeah, supposed to be. It's okay, guys. He's actually 28.
Oh, well.
Gooey. The guys on the ground are fighting. They're fighting again, but I forget at one. I think they have this guy almost finished off, but he gets it changes his attacks a bit. Now he goes from defending himself because he knows he's weakness now. So it's like full on attacking them.
I think Bang just gets a good hit on
Silver Fang Bang and knock him into a wall.
I think it's when Bang takes out, like, he only has one head left.
Oh, yeah, he's got two heads and Bang takes out one. Penultimate one.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, he decides after just smacking Bang into a wall that it's just like, oh, wait, I'll just fucking attack instead of defend all the time.
Mm.
Because he did spend a considerable portion of the fight just regenerating and standing there and slowly walking back towards the ship.
Yeah. So after breaking through enough walls and into that, Boros is awaiting in his throne room, and September eventually manages to find his way through. He busts the wall down. He's there. He's like, you must be the big boss. And he said, yes. I am Lord Boros. I am the dominator of the universe. Do you know why I've come here? I'll tell you why I've come here. I have subjugated galaxies, planets, stars, and I went from planet to planet destroying civilizations. I'm trying to find, somebody who could, challenge me. I've challenged my awesome power and give me the thrill of battle once again. So.
Well, he's made a prophecy, hasn't he? We get this prophecy scene, which is like a version of the prophecy Earth had, but with an alien.
Well, yeah, it's like a tentacle version of the old lady,
yeah. Yes, I was told by a seer, if I traveled to this planet called Earth, I would meet an opponent to be able to match me in a fire and make me feel alive once again.
They all called me crazy. They said, they were totally just saying that to get rid of me so I'd leave, but it's like, no, it's totally a prophecy, you guys.
Is it not that he doesn't know which planet? He's been suppressing these planets to try and find...
Yeah, he doesn't know which one is the right one.
So he's been, because they're the Dark Matter Pirates or something.
Yeah.
What a name.
And they've been 20 years they've been searching, and he's finally found the man mentioned in his prophecy. And of which, he's not... Slytherin's not impressed.
Yeah, he's like, come on, what are you doing? Going on destroying the planets just because you're bored. That's not cool, man.
It's like, we should exchange names. I am the Great Lord Thing. It's like, I'm Saitama, hero for fun. I mean, professional hero.
So he's all his while giving his backstory. He's walking down from the throne. He was putting Saitama under almost like nose to nose. And it's like, so, that's the stone. Would you want to fight or not? How strong are you? And he gets one punch in. One punch in, knocks the guy back like 50 feet, and he's embedded in the wall. Saitama's up pissed. And then he's all like, Boros is like, this impregnable armor that was designed specifically to contain my awesome power has been shattered now. Now my real power will be unleashed. I will feel terror I can rebound. He's powering up, this crackling of energy and lightning. He's
super saiying. Yeah.
I was going to say he's more ninja slayering in the colors he has.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It does tend to go a bit trippy, all right.
There's the world of aura, there's waves of power. I'm glad the guy did it this way. Did it report the exact same way it looks in the comic? Does such have a nonplus? Like, okay.
It's like, you just power up there, buddy. I'll be right here.
Okay.
So there's no other way you could make that image of him funnier. So they have to do it exactly the same way. Yeah.
It's just like, there's so many ways that I know, the show him, but then like freeze or something like that, and saying, yes, now I have achieved my true form by perfect ability.
Form.
Now you will know my true power. And he's just like, yep, okay, bring it on. So let's change the set for the final showdown, the last episode of the season this week. Oh my goodness.
No!
Oh, you missed the bits which were changed from the comic. which is we have Licenseless Rider show up.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't in the comic. That was an add-in for the anime.
That was a really nice bit where he's just picking up dudes on his bike, I guess, yeah, just sitting on the grass bar or something, and taking them in. It's like, I got to go rescue more people.
And the other two dudes from the hospital show up as well to help.
Yeah, yeah. What's it, Lightning?
Stinger and Lightning Max.
Yeah, yeah.
They say, can we rob that tank? We got to go save some people. It's like, yeah, these guys are cool. that was a nice bit. The fight between Melzegard and or Mysegard, I don't know what his name is, and what is it? It was Metal Bat, Atomic Samurai,
and Puni Prisoner.
Yeah, and you had the guy shout on side of us, hey guys, maybe we should retreat and see if like lasers or fireworks on him, and they're like, fuck that. I don't even know how to punch things or cut things or hit things with a baseball bat.
there's a guy there amongst like these cyborgs, these kung fu masters, and these like psychic power people. A guy whose power is I hit things with a bat. I'm guessing he's kind of like the Thor of the group or something.
Yeah, it appears to be like Japanese ruffian Thor.
I love Metal Bat. He is the man.
And it contains some of the worst animation of the series, and also some of the best animation.
Looked amazing, but some of the other bits were just like, yeah, we don't really have to spend money on this bit, do we? It's like, no, I guess not.
Next week.
More time more than money, I think, is more the issue.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Next week.
I'm wondering if we got covered during on this time, because there's lots of shots of things being like cut in half and into pieces like that, which, you know,
it comes
up a lot in his filmography.
Yeah, Atomic Samurai gets the eye catch this week.
Yeah, that was a nice one too.
Has Metal Bat had an eye catch yet?
No, this is the first time we see him in action, I think.
Yeah. Sad. He's the best.
I'm going to guess it will be either Boros or Saitama next week.
Or one of each.
Or both.
Or both, well, yeah. Oh, what a great episode. Not quite as good as last week's, but building up to the perfect storm.
Yeah, and I wonder if the fight will be longer in the anime than is in the comic.
See, I remember it quite going on a little
It goes on longer than any of the fights we've seen before.
Well, it already has.
Particularly because he kept on redrawing parts of it.
Oh, yes, that's probably why it feels like it lasted for months.
Maybe they should just reanimate this episode, next week's episode.
Imagine get several different people to animate different ways.
If this season got, like, rinsed and repeated over and over again, that'd be great.
Just to improve the animation each time.
Well, not even to improve, just to make it different. Oh, imagine.
Yeah, we've just got different people to make the same story over and over.
Yeah, yeah, like a...
each year.
A rotoscope series one time. A live action version. Like, oh, it'd be great.
Puppets.
Oh, gosh. And I would watch it every time.
Right. We'll be back next week with our Christmas episode, Let's Go Ho Ho Ho. And then we'll be back in the new year after a week or two break.
Hey, we've earned it. Come on. Watch the noise.
Well, we'll have to catch up with the last two episodes or last three episodes or last six episodes in the case of Lovely Mooncake.
Easy. Easy. What's the best Christmas present I've ever had? Ever. Maybe.
Oh, so gosh. And hopefully this cough will be gone by then. But who knows? Maybe I'll be on an inhaler. Right. That ends this week's episode. Let's go. In the meantime, check out our regular podcasts where there'll be some Dynamite in the Brain Christmas and New Year's related episodes coming up as well. At dynamiteinthebrain.com. Are there any Christmas Secret of the Sailor Madness episodes coming up?
Yep.
There will be. We will be, continuing our journey into the animated animals of Trying to Think of the Great Christmas Carol with the Robert Zemeckis, Jim Carrey, CG animated Christmas Carol coming very soon.
Oh, dearie me.
Whose choice was that?
We have to ours? Do every version of a Christmas Carol, and there's so many, dude.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, every version or just every animated version?
Well, every animated version, because otherwise you'd be there for fucking ever.
Forever. Ever and ever and ever. Oh, that film.
Yeah, I didn't even watch it. Beowulf was enough to put me off any.
I want the pictures to see that, and Beowulf, and Christmas Carol, and whatever else he does.
Polar Express.
I've seen that. It's all right, you know. I think that's his best CG. I'm going to say it.
Yes, we better find that podcast at Secret of the Sailor Madness blog. Secret of the Sailor Madness .blogspot.com even. So yeah, be back here next week for Christmas. Bye bye.
Happy New Year.
Please Navidad.
Bye.